It's The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. The violence in Charlottesville on Saturday was acute. It was one moment in time where protesters and counter-protesters attacked each other and where a white nationalist allegedly drove his car into a crowd. But it brings to mind violence of a more chronic kind. And there's a long list of names that's familiar now in America. Eric Garner, Tamir Rice, Philando Castile. Just a few of the high-profile deaths of African-American men at the hands of law enforcement. But then there's the 2015 death of Sandra Bland. She was a 28-year-old woman found hanged in her jail cell after being arrested during a traffic stop in Texas. And the case, for some, illustrates long-hidden acts of police violence against women of color, not as often fatal, but underreported. Andrea Ritchie has been studying the roots of police violence against women of color for more than two decades. She's an attorney and author of the new book, Invisible No More, Police Violence Against Black Women and Women of Color.
Often the studies are framed as gender neutral, but really the assumption is that we're only talking about men of color and black men specifically. And often the data exists where scientists or people who are analyzing it could compare the experiences, for instance, of black women against those of white women or women of other races. And people just don't actually bother to do the analysis.
So there's a lot of focus in your book, Andrea Ritchie, on girls of color. And you say here that the policing of women of color actually starts very early, actually starts when they are girls.
That's correct. And recently, there was a study that came out of Georgetown that talked about the adultification of black girls. In other words, that adults treat black girls as if they're sort of mini adults, starting at a very, very young age. So one of the first stories I learned about in studying this issue was of a 5-year-old girl who had been handcuffed in her school for essentially having a temper tantrum, which I'm almost certain, without scientifically studying this, that every 5-year-old has had at least once. But in her case, the response was that the police were called to her school. And when they saw that a 5-year-old was by that time sitting calmly in a chair, they still proceeded to put handcuffs on her, even though they were too big. They couldn't fit on her wrists. They had to put them around her upper arms because they were too big for her wrists. And I just, in that moment, I think that adultification is playing out in ways that are incomprehensible because someone is literally arresting a 5-year-old for assault when clearly they're behaving as any child would. But the perception is that they deserve the kind of punishment an adult would get in that situation. And so I feel like that study was really instructive in showing how the policing of black girls starts at such an early age and what the dynamics are that are informing that.
Well, I want to talk about a couple of cases with older children, not 5-year-olds, that you say are illustrative here. The case of Jigeria Becton in Texas, a high school senior who was attending a graduation pool party in an enclave outside of Dallas. People will remember the video of Miss Becton in a bikini on the lawn outside of the pool where a uniformed police officer who was white grabbed her, slammed her to the ground, and then put his knee in the center of her back. And you really highlight this case as an illustration of something important.
So first of all, if you watch the entire video of the interaction, she was actually walking away when he tackled her. Yet in the papers that he filed in the lawsuit, he makes a significant argument about what a threat she was to him in that moment and how she was posing a threat to his ability to engage in the policing activities that he was engaged in as she was walking away. And as she was walking away, she called back to someone to call her mother. And that was what the officer perceived to be a threat. It's, again, this perception that black girls, no matter how young, no matter how small, no matter what they're doing, are perceived by police as a threat that must be met with the kind of force that we saw in that video. And then secondly, it was illustrative of the fact that, you know, the presence of black girls in public spaces is perceived as a threat. And that was what prompted the incident in the first place, that there were white adults who felt that there were just too many black children at a pool that they sort of expected to be white space. And that led to racist interactions and altercations, but then also a police response that presumed that the presence of black children there was a sign of disorder that had to be responded to.
Of course, you talk about the effects of policing and incarceration on women as well, not just on girls. And you talk about the case of Sandra Bland. It was a traffic stop. Sandra Bland pulled over, later on found dead in her jail cell, ruled a suicide. You point to this early in the book as a rallying point. You say, in some ways, Sandra Bland came to stand for every black woman who's ever changed lanes without using a turn signal, expressed frustration at getting pulled over, or suffered depression. What did you mean by that?
Sandra Bland's case sometimes gets framed in the public discourse as if it's sort of an anomaly in that it was a traffic stop and it happened to catch a black woman instead of the usual sort of main target black men, and that it gets told as a story that's sort of an addendum or maybe a little diversion from the main story, and then we return to the main story with the usual cast of characters. And Sandra Bland's story matters because Sandra matters, but it also matters because it's a story of so many black women who have experienced traffic stops, that her case is part of a larger pattern. And it's so much so part of a larger pattern that many black women saw it, recognized themselves in it, and really created space for a lot of black women to come forward, to talk about their experiences publicly, to rally around them, to demand attention to them as part of these larger conversations about racial profiling and police brutality.
Are women of color as likely to get pulled over in the first place as men of color, especially when compared to white people?
I would say that every study I've seen that disaggregates the data according to both gender and race has found near identical rates of racial disparity among stops of women as they find among stops of men.
Well, Andrea Ritchie, some of this script got flipped a few weeks ago in Minneapolis. Justine Damon was a white woman from Australia. People came out in the streets in Minneapolis to protest. How do you think the country and the media digested that story in light of the other police violence against women that you're talking about in this book?
I think there's been a lot of conversation about how little effort there was to dig up her past criminal history, to try and put the blame on her for what happened to her, for how little question there was that this was an improper shooting. And many law enforcement officers came out immediately to say that this was an improper shooting and that this was a tragedy. And for many of us, it was so painful to watch because it was such a different response to any time a black woman or girl is assaulted or killed by police officers. So obviously it was a tragedy and representative of some of the patterns I talk about in the book where, you know, women call for help and police officers perceive them as a threat and kill them as they did in Charlena Lyle's case. But as you can see, the difference there is that immediately the question was Charlena Lyle's was framed and perceived by the public and the police in a very different way and blamed for her own death. So the contrast was really quite stark.
Well, Andrea Ritchie, your book seeks to change the conversation when it comes to black girls and black women and women of color and policing. Where do you think the conversation goes from here? How does the coverage have to change?
The hope is that it will shift the narrative such that we are looking at these issues through the lens of women's experiences as a matter of course, and that that is a normal part of the conversation, that central every time we talk about policing, that we're going to talk about the ways in which, for instance, Jeff Sessions ramping up the war on drugs, how that's going to affect women of color in ways that are similar and unique to them, or similar to the experiences of men and then unique to the experiences of women. And both of those things are going to be central in our conversation about the impacts of that policy decision and our response to it.
Andrea Ritchie is an attorney and an author. The new book is Invisible No More, Police Violence Against Black Women and Women of Color. Andrea Ritchie, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI, to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.